And welcome back to Real Clear with Dr. Klein, the crossroads of politics and psychology. If you would like to listen to ad-free episodes and have access to daily and weekly releases, essays, and other membership perks, and you also want to help in the production of this program, go to realclearpodcast.com and click subscribe. There are a lot of places in this world where you can put your money, and so I thank you for considering membership to realclearpodcast.com. I hope you enjoy this next episode. Welcome back to Real Clear, everybody. I am joined again by Wilfred Riley, Kentucky State University political genius, and his books are Upcoming Lies, My Liberal Teacher Told Me, Debunking the False Narratives Defining America's School Curricula. That comes out June 11th. Pre-order it. You won't be disappointed. His previous books include Hate Crime Hoax. I really love that one. Taboo, 10 Facts You Can't Talk About. That's my favorite. And he's got others. Will, Professor, how you doing?
I'm doing great. Glad to be back on the program.
I always get messages asking me when I'm having you back, and I'm so glad we get to talk again. So I have a few topics that are just loose areas that we can focus on. I've been thinking recently on how to bifurcate American news into two categories, bullshit versus things that we should be paying attention to. And sometimes those two things overlap on a Venn diagram, but I'd like to get your take on what's most important and what Americans are being distracted by that they really should ignore. Do you have any broad directions there for us?
I think broad directionality that I'd put onto that is you should ignore things that aren't happening on a large scale and they're just flashy distractions. So an example, if you follow social media, one of the better known OnlyFans partiers, Nalo Ray or something like that, just converted to Christianity, like allegedly.
So important.
Yeah, but she found herself a good Christian man and they're definitely not going to make trad wife porn together in a year. And she's going to church and all this.
Yeah.
And this is something, I mean, this story actually made it to like the New York Post. It's something that dominated social media conversation for a couple of days. This is a classic example of something that doesn't matter. I have no hate for this woman who apparently is known for making an anime character style orgasm face. That's her claim to fame. I don't have any real affection for her either. The monetization of online quote unquote pottery by OnlyFans is funny and probably negative for society of 2 million U.S. female users. Now, it's just an example of a story that doesn't really matter at all. Like it might affect that couple's bedroom life or something, but it's irrelevant to everyone. I think the stories that matter are the stories that are descriptions of sweeping large-end events in the real world. So, for example, I do think the Israel-Palestine conflict matters. One, because it's a war between two nation-state level players. Tens of thousands of people are going to die. But also, two, because it does illustrate really sweeping trends in our society.
Mm-hmm.
So I think a lot of people are now looking at the wokes, quote unquote, and saying, hey, wait, all these people are anti-Semites. At Columbia today, we actually saw the speaker backed by the Hezbollah flag. And I think the answer is yes, at least in this context. But there's a deeper issue there. Like the reason that this movement is so anti-Semitic is that it's anti-Western, to some extent anti-white. There's a whole group of kind of evil characters that a Jewish businessman would certainly fall into. So I think that's an important story. What does it mean that these people are heavily represented on the faculty? Columbia's an Ivy school, like major schools with tens of thousands of students. So that I think is a good example of a broad story. Regulation is a broad story. War generally is, taxes, that kind of thing.
Yes. And the country's watching. This is wild. It's just wild. If you look at the videos unfolding from Columbia and other schools, these students walking around, I wouldn't trust them to run a cash register. And they're going to $68,000 a year tuition at Columbia and other schools like that. What does this represent about the, let's say, psychology, cognitive processes, political persuasions, if you will, all of the above, whatever those things point to, about the upcoming generations and what's in store for America if or when these people become instantiated in the tiers of government?
One thing I think it represents is just that young people are often D-U-M, dumb, not necessarily in G-factor terms, but they tend to believe stupid stuff. The person you're with now is going to be the only person that loves you and they will forever, although that's at least forgivable. But all the way up to in the political space, we should move to socialist utopia tomorrow. There was a quote on one of the social platforms, Twitter or Facebook or something, the other day that was so idiotic that I responded to it, and I think a few thousand other people did. A guy said, if you find yourself ever opposing a student-led youth movement and defending the government or the military, you're in the wrong. And I thought about that, and it's almost diametrically false. Like, most of the worst movements in history, from the Children's Crusade to the Cultural Revolution to the Iranian Islamic Revolution, have been led by these young, passionate people that don't know anything about the world and have one really specific goal and have enough moderately trained fighting men in their ranks that they might achieve it. But once you kill the Shah, the question is, or drive him to exile or whatever, the question is, what do you do next? And very often you find that the Robespierres and the Toussaint L'Ouvertures and so on don't really have any idea. So this trend, I've just named four or five movements that stretch across different countries and continents, go back across decades. We've seen this in the USA as well. We tend to romanticize the hippies today, the shaggy, hitted and crotched college kids that are fighting Vietnam and the man and so on. But in reality, most of what they were saying was completely idiotic. There were crowds chanting Ho Chi Minh and waving Viet Cong flags. And the actual goal that the USA fully pull out of the former Indochina and out of Cambodia quite arguably led to massive genocides. I mean, to the deaths of 3 or 4 million people total. So I guess where I'm going with this is, one, I don't know if this is different from the past, the Flower Revolution, the Children's Crusade, from thousands of years of idiocy that happens when you let young members of the elite take power or pursue power. I do think it's intensifying. And I think another thing, final point, but this is one of the reasons when people ask, how can you disagree with the experts? How can you disagree with, so in terms of some of my comments about therapy or youth gender medicine or a dozen other things, how can you disagree with people who have master's level degrees from Yale and Columbia? Because the people who have master's level degrees from Yale and Columbia are the idiots we see crapping in the street and waving Hezbollah flags right now. Like, those are environments that lean about 93% to one side of the political aisle, which I don't think either one of us is on. Completely insane commentary from the river to the sea, genocidal stuff in many cases has been normalized. And I don't think that's going to magically wash out of these people when they get out of college. But that's something that normal kind of business types, including both of us, need to recall. The idea for a long time was when these people get out to real trading floors, when they're real medical residents, real army officers, this is going to get kicked out of them perhaps literally in weeks. Didn't happen. What happened is that they set up these enclaves, like new HR, DEI, ESG, SEL, all the rest of it, and moved critical theory into the actual world. So we've got to keep an eye on that still ongoing process.
I was going to ask you, what's a stupider, more ill-informed movement? The Free Palestinian Movement, or whatever you want to call it, unfolding at Columbia, or the BLM movement, which oversaw the wreckage of American criminal justice and safety. And perhaps you have thoughts on that. But I was talking with my friend Hank Capel when he was on last time, and we got to talking after we were finished recording. And I said, Hank, there's one podcast now across all domains, and it's basically people getting on a microphone and saying, can you believe what's happening? This is insane. That's the only podcast now. And largely because, can you believe what's happening? This is insane. And it leads people, especially myself as a clinical psych, to wonder about the collective sanity of this country, which you and I are off to discuss when you come on here. It just blows my mind. And I can't tell if sometimes I'm being fed certain kinds of news because of the algorithm, or whether there's actually veridically insane things going on. And that's why I've started to bifurcate news stories in terms of bullshit versus things we should be paying attention to. Good borderline. And just two options, right? But the only podcast now, the only news show is, look at how insane things are. And to wit, sometimes I load up stories about what the far right are doing these days. And I think, what the hell is going on? In Arizona, you cannot have an abortion at all. And simultaneously, the very same people want to reduce welfare. Who's thinking? Who's thinking behind the helm? Anybody? What, can you tell us your thoughts now about who's going to win in November? That's my question.
Oh, right. So great lead in. So first of all, I think Trump's probably going to win because Biden is dead. All banter aside, we saw Biden look at the teleprompter, I think yesterday, and literally Ron Burgundy style read off teleprompter commands. He didn't forget a word. He said pause. Yeah. It was like, you know, four more years, clause for applause. And then people started clapping. So when you have a guy that's doing that, people, partisans for his side can try to defend him as much as they want. The average person, and this is one reason I like spending a lot of time with like average working middle class taxpayers, go to the gym or whatever. The average person looking at that is, this is complete bullshit. This guy's got dementia. He's crazy. There's none of these pauses. Like, I have a public platform. I'm not a doctor. I don't want to diagnose him. Like, it's obvious what's going on. And like a black liberal guy is as likely to say that as a white conservative guy in urban Kentucky, at least. So Trump is probably going to win, and all the insanity in society is definitely going to help him. Trump himself is a big participant in social insanity, marrying Slovenian models and living in gold penthouses and all this sort of thing. But he's Republican coded. Like, he's a big, sturdy guy in a navy blue suit who's got the elephant behind him. So I think that's going to benefit him. There's a short second comment. Like, is society getting crazier? I don't think so. Thinking back to the 1990s rave scene, like how easy it would have been to film videos of explicit sex or violence in any social event. I think what's happened is that there's more of a news culture and everyone has a phone. So if a white guy and a black guy get in a fight and either the N-word is used before a violent brawl, or like the white guy loses and gets kicked in the head, whatever terrible but local thing, that's going to be shared out. There are social accounts like Ian Miles Strong comes to mind that do basically this, that pretty obviously, and I know hate for the guy, but look through news feeds for the wildest and most triggering items and present them. So do we have more pedophiles or more racial tension or something like that than we did in 1977? Almost certainly not. But the perception that we do, and the reality that we still have quite a lot, that I think that's going to benefit Trump. I don't see how Biden could win the election legitimately.
What about Trump's trials right now? You and I have talked about that in the various times you've been on, and I think it's important to address these things incrementally as we march toward November. What's going on with his criminal trial? Is that going to actually yield anything substantial in terms of, I guess, incarceration on the one extreme versus some sort of conviction that liberal states will try to use to remove him from the ballot, even though it's already been struck down by various Supreme Courts? And then with respect to his currently unfolding Supreme Court appeal or case to determine if he has presidential, if any president has presidential immunity from acts committed during presidency. Do you have any thoughts on what's unfolding right now?
My broad thought, I'm not day to day up to date on all these cases, but I do some consulting, including in a space that involves legal cases. I follow the major trials of the day. My overall take is that these cases are complete partisan bullshit. Have you ever read that book, Five Felonies a Day?
No.
The author just makes the point, we often hear that you shouldn't break the law. And at some level, if you're talking about child abuse, sure, that's true. But the reality is that most things, like music piracy over 100 songs, and probably more of an issue in his day, but is a felony. Hooking up or having sex outside is a felony. Driving more than 25 miles over the speed limit is a felony. It's reckless driving. Potentially, if you have past driving issues or whatever. But I mean, he goes through 20 or 30 of these things that are not uncommon. He's shoving someone in a conflict situation, felony assaults. If a girl kisses you without asking, is that assault? And the answer in a lot of these cases actually is no. There's reasonable suppositions you can make about human behavior. But the point's really clear. Most people could be charged with most things pretty often. When you get into Trump's tax bracket, the percentage of people that could face some kind of IRS or SEC complaint for recklessly or knowledgeably or intentionally misrepresenting their finances is probably pretty close to the total population of people. And so this is how I feel about the stuff Trump is charged with. I'm sure he did a lot of it. He had those documents, for example. But the documents case where the claim is that Donald Trump had classified material in Mar-a-Lago, except for Trump's idiotic obfuscation about giving it back, it's extremely similar to the Joe Biden documents case, where Joe Biden had more sensitive classified documents in his fucking Camaro garage. Boxes of them. He had 8 or 9 boxes in back of the car. People have taken Google Maps pictures of the situation and showed what was there. He had other documents somewhere else, like at the Biden Center at, I believe, the University of Delaware. That's one of those cases. Another case is Alvin Bragg. Correct me, obviously, if you don't, I'm wrong about any of these, but Alvin Bragg's New York case is the extension of what should be a state misdemeanor charge it's the extension of what should be a federal misdeed charge, actually, into 34 state felony counts. And the original source there is the claim that Donald Trump used $30,000 of essentially his money to pay off a porn star that he had sex with so she wouldn't talk about it. Again, the statute of limitations has probably expired in this case. I don't know about the federal state transfer of the relevant statute.
Yes, but the kicker here is that they suspended the statutes of limitation for 1 year so that they could begin a case against Donald Trump. And for historical reference, Bill Clinton, I believe, paid Paula Jones $800,000 for the identical cause. It is not actually illegal to sign an NDA with someone to require them to not disclose certain information about an interaction with you. That's actually not illegal. And I think most people don't understand it isn't. They think, oh, he paid somebody to be quiet. Oh, that's terrible. That must be a crime. It's actually not a crime. You're allowed to do that. You and I, when we're done recording today, you could say to me, hey, listen, I'd rather this didn't air and I'll pay you $500 that it doesn't and let's sign a paper. And that would be completely legal. I believe the question here is whether campaign funds were used to reimburse Donald Trump. Am I right about that?
If you would like to listen to ad-free episodes and have access to daily and weekly releases, essays, and other membership perks, and you also want to help in the production of this program, go to realclearpodcast.com and click subscribe. There are a lot of places in this world where you can put your money, and so I thank you for considering membership to realclearpodcast.com.
Yeah, it's a very technical question about where he got the money. Even if he did commit a misdemeanor campaign finance violation, it would be extremely rare to see charges brought in a case like this. And you would normally bring one charge, not 34, trying to rope in other people. And so it's just obviously purely political. Yeah, I don't want to start fumbling into the technical details of law that I don't really remember from Illinois in 2005. It's just the case obviously is what it is. Yeah, Bill Clinton did almost exactly the same thing. Even if you think that what Trump did was different because campaign funds were involved, it's very unlikely that if Trump were not running for president, if he weren't a prominent person, that charges would have been brought. And even in that situation, you'd normally bring one or two counts, not this. This is obviously designed to humiliate. We forget, but Donald Trump does have a wife, and by all accounts, they like each other. Like, you're taking this guy, this married guy, and throwing him in the spotlight and constantly saying, screw the porn star, as one of his political rivals, as Big Al Bragg. It's clear why that's going on. So you have the documents case where you had almost identical facts, a little less obfuscation against Mr. Biden. You have this case, which is the transition of a minor violation at one level into 34 felony counts at another level where it shouldn't be. And you've got more of these cases. You've got the case in Georgia where, what's her name, Fannie Willis? That's the documents case, right?
Fannie Willis is the RICO case for election denial.
Right.
This is a wild case because she installed her lover as the lead prosecutor absolutely no historical experience in a case like this whatsoever, and spent an obscene amount of money going on vacations with him and so forth. And then when asked about why she was using or being paid back in cash or something to that effect, she said she invoked some sort of racial line, like that's just black people have a lot of cash around and so on. And then when asked factual information about her interactions with her lover, she said, oh, I will not demean a strong black man for the purposes of this court. This is getting so insane. What's going on in this country? I hate to sound like Trump there because that's just what he says, right? When you look at this and when you look at that, it's all crazy. But like I said, that's the only podcast there is now. We've got Marjorie Taylor Greene on the Republican side. We've got AOC on the Democrat side. And we've got these cases unfolding. And I'm wondering when the Marquis of Queensberry boxing rules went out of date and whether it was a good idea to take off the gloves. I don't think it was. And I'd like to know when they were taken off. Do you have any idea and who took them off?
I think it's been a gradual process of both parties becoming more. So there's an underlying reason for this. If you read some of the papers that have come out in American Journal of Political Science recently, AJPS, for example, partisanship and polarization is something you can measure. You can pretty easily look at whether political candidates are closer to or further away from the median American voter on an issue like abortion than they have been in the past. And what we're seeing is fairly intense polarization. Like, I don't have the author's names at tip of tongue right now, but for example, right now, the most conservative Democrat is more liberal than the most liberal Republican. That's one of something like two times that's ever happened historically. So that leads to a situation where a bunch of people, like I think both of us, certainly like most of the women I know who are doing well in business, a huge number of people fall into that kind of politically homeless category where you have combinations of views that used to be fairly common, like you're pro-choice through 3 or 4 months, but you want a strong border. And you find that there's no party that represents that sort of mainstream position. So this is like a real thing we can track. And abortion actually, like last on that, but is a pretty good example of this because right now, the official position of the Republican Party, as I understand, is that abortion should be illegal after conception, except for rape, incest, and life of the mother. That's what it breaks down to. Some of the liberals might go out to a 6-week, quote unquote, heartbeat bill, but that's a position that 9% of the country agrees with. The Democrats are even worse, which is insane when you think about it. But their position is that you should be able to abort a fully formed, you know, fetus slash baby up to the moment of birth. Like the head can come out and you can stab it with a knife. Not to be graphic, that's the actual policy position. It looks like a direct transcription of Women Now, National Organization of Women's policy position a couple decades back, by the way. But so a lot of people look at situations like this and think that our political leaders are batshit insane. When that is a measurable thing. That used to not be the case. So because of this, you've been seeing the gloves come off gradually over the years. Do you remember the nuclear option fight in the Senate?
Yes.
Yeah. There are all these specific things. Like, for example, can you filibuster or object in a civilized manner to the nomination of judges? These things that used to exist that made a certain level of bipartisanship essential in government. And over time, we've gradually seen those fall away. Like there's actually a class I teach called Legislative Process. And we open with the classic how a bill becomes a law video from Schoolhouse Rock. Yeah, he's just a bill on Capitol Hill. Sad looking piece of legislation always looks a little hungover to me, but is sitting there on the Capitol steps. And they go through this whole thing like one good, honest congressman stands up and proposes me. And I go to one committee for a week and they vote. But 6 weeks later, the bill is a law. That actually legitimately used to happen through the 1980s into the 90s. Now the book we use in that class is called Unorthodox Lawmaking, and it gets into all of the crap that happens in almost every case, like bills being in practice written by lobbyists, what you call Barack Obama brings, or some smart guy will be picked House leadership to bring something. Just we've seen that intensify dramatically in recent years.
I love that term, unorthodox lawmaking. It's just a different style.
So corruption.
Not at all. There's a number of things that crossed my mind in the closing moments of our recording today. We've got the CAST report that came out of the UK just recently, as if anybody needed a long-term, enormous study to tell them that you should not try to medically alter children's sex. Forget about the results of the study. The fact that a society, an entire swath and region of the world needs that kind of report to tell them that, yeah, that's not a great idea, is pretty insane. When you've got people in the United States who historically have, or at least are descendants of people who would call themselves liberals and so forth, literally barring Jews from getting on campus. And then you've got, say, people like my favorite person, Marjorie Taylor Greene, pulling other crabs down back into the barrel. Now she's angling to pull Speaker Johnson down into the barrel and so forth. So the gloves came off of the Queensberry rules, and now they're knocking each other out. And other items of insanity around the country. Crime went up a staggering something like 200% in 2019, dipped about 5% in 2023, and all of a sudden Biden claimed crime is down. I don't know, Professor Riley. I tend to sit here and get a bit pulled in to my own rhetoric, which says we're going insane. The marble pillars may not be falling down in ancient Rome. The Vandals may not be outside of the gates, but for heaven's sakes, our cognitive faculties as a cohesive nation seem to be already asunder, pulled asunder. Am I wrong there?
I don't think you're wrong about that. In terms of a lot of pathologies that we can track, I don't think there's more child sexual abuse or black on white violence or white on black violence, more police brutality. To a large extent, even because if we are becoming crazier and more violent, we've spent the past 40 years putting checks into place that work pretty well, cops wear cameras and so on. So I think when people look at the stuff on, say, YouTube or Twitter, and they say, the country's going to hell. No, not really. But in terms of what you just said, which is that people seem to be believing. So I actually think there are two levels here. But when you say many people are coming to believe things that would have been thought of in any previous society as crazy, at least you're talking recent past, you're talking back before 11, and like, Jews secretly control the world, or you can change your sex at will. I think that's an even more extreme one. Yeah, those are trackable trends. So I guess the one point I would make about that, when we talked about what a big story is at the beginning of the pod, the Cass report is a big story. I mean, the British government, led by a classical liberal, this is it, Rush Limbaugh in the dean's chair there, looked at this whole idea of youth gender transition. And in fact, at most of the research on gender dysphoria overall, and said that it was basically bullshit. But there's no evidence, if I'm reading this correctly, that this process is a good thing for children. They cited that Swedish study that just came out, which found that if anything, mental health worsens after transition. There finally are studies now that look at patients the usual 10, 12 years down the road, because we haven't been doing this all that long. They gave recommendations about what to do with kids in the future that seemed to break down to maybe you let them do some social things, but don't mutilate them, don't abuse them. And it's obvious to most people that what the report says makes sense, but there's been a hysterical backlash to it. So you're seeing this debate between, quote unquote, the TERFs, like old school feminists like Helen Joyce, Watson, Luca Hine, you could name a bunch of them, but versus the sort of trans rights activists that are claiming a bunch of things, Alejandra Caballero and so on, that seemed to mostly just be made up, that the methodology for the report was bad. We're both competent methodologists. No, it wasn't. But just there's a huge intense struggle about this. And one point that you made that is an important one is that this is only going on in the West. When you said our culture is going crazy, I often hear our world's going crazy. And that's not quite true. In China, India, the remainder of the BRICS, Russia and Eastern Europe, rising West Africa, just on and on down the line, there is none of this. There are no other great societies, the Arab world, that have accepted the idea that you can change your sex on a whim. One exception might be Iran, which often castrates gay men and tells them they're women, as I understand. But it's not really the shining light to follow there, probably for the Western world. But we believe this, and it's obvious, I think, to most people at some level that it's nuts. But the belief is spreading. So yeah, that I think is a new one. The question in one sentence is whether that is crazier than other beliefs that we've had in the past. The world is 5,000 years old and so on. There seems to be an instinctive human desire to believe what the boss man says, even if it's nonsensical. So we're seeing a weird manifestation of it today. But like a feminist friend actually said that to me online. And I was like, has anyone ever believed something this nutty? Yeah, that if women had clitoral orgasms, they were nymphomaniacs and they should be electrocuted. Just going back through the whole history of the early social sciences, she has hysteria. Humans have many bizarre beliefs that often endure for quite a while.
We used to drill into people's brains in hopes that we could somehow resolve the psychological distress that we're sure probably originated somewhere behind the eyes. And oh, we're somewhere in that territory again. Professor Wilfred Riley, thanks for coming back on. Always a pleasure. And we'll talk to you again.